You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
Calgary Flames fans, it's time for Flames Unfiltered. Entertaining and controversial hockey talk with your host, Brad Berube. Flames win. A picture-perfect start to the series. Let's be happy. Let's be confident. But there is a lot of work ahead. Good afternoon and welcome to Flames Unfiltered. Episode number 108, recording it the day after the Flames win game one of the qualifying series. It's August 2nd, 2020. I am the host of the show, Brad Berube. And man, we have a fun-filled show, an action-packed show. Great interview with the guys from Grit 60, a podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. And I am pumped. Flames win and hockey is back. You have no idea how happy I finally am. Yes, to finally say hockey is back. We have playoff hockey. Hockey's a huge part of my life, and waking up Saturday morning was like a fresh new start. Man, with all the negativity and the disaster that we've been having in this world, seeing the bubble work and the intensity levels at a even higher pace than I thought they would be at, made me believe that on Saturday that, hey, this is going to work, and hockey is back, and it's real hockey. It's Stanley Cup playoff hockey. And it just was so refreshing and so fun to see. Great games all day long Saturday, topped off by, yeah, a Flames win. That made the day even that much better. But you know what? It's time to talk Flames hockey. We have a lot to talk about on this show, and we're going to start out with a little short recap of the Battle of Alberta exhibition game, and then it's on to get the serious stuff and break down that game one Winnipeg-Calgary qualifying series. We'll welcome Connor and Brandon Farrell from Winnipeg Jets podcast, Grit 60. You can listen to that on the Hockey Podcast Network. And we'll get their input from a great game one if you're a Flames fan. Maybe not if you're a Jets fan. It'll be interesting to see what they have to say about all this. I will explain why I feel that this was a picture-perfect playoff game for the Flames. And we'll also talk about, yeah, the Tkachuk factor and the controversy. How could we not? So, there is a ton of Flames news to talk about, and then we'll roll into some Flames news and notes, and then we'll wrap it up with a Facebook poll that will bring to light how non-Flames fans and hockey fans in general feel about that Tkachuk hit. We'll wrap the show up with, man, what lies ahead for the Flames, the schedule for games 2 through 5. Of this qualifying series. It's going to be a busy, busy playoff week of hockey. And, man, it is so wonderful to say that Flames hockey is back.
Balls can hurt, but yours don't have to. At Manscaped, we save balls. Prevent manscaping accidents with the Lawnmower 3.0, featuring skin-safe technology by Manscaped.
Get 20% off and free shipping when you use promo code THPN at manscaped.com. Your balls will thank you. All right, Flames fans, finally live hockey to talk about. Tuesday, the 28th of July, we started with an exhibition game. And it was kind of interesting because we got to see what the bubble was really all about and what hockey was going to be like without fans and how the NHL was going to have it set up so that viewing-wise, it was good. And you know what? I was pretty impressed. I love what the NHL is doing with this bubble. I think it's working. I think that the arena looks as good as it possibly can without cheering fans in there. I don't know how, any other way to put it. I think the graphics behind the benches help. The crowd noise to me helps immensely. Yeah, overall, a great look, and hats off to the National Hockey League on that. So, Tuesday night, Edmonton defeats Calgary 4-1. Shots on goal did favor Calgary 37-30. An absolute horrendous start for the Flames. They looked atrocious in the first period. I was ready to throw in the towel. It was bad. Kachuk. Why does everything go to Kachuk? Lindholm did get a goal. That was the only Flames goal, and might have had some argument had it been not an exhibition game that it would be called off with Kachuk deep in the crease on was it Koskinen? Yeah, it was against Koskinen. But Edmonton scored right away. Talbot was out of position. They go up 1-0, and then McDavid scores on a power play, and then I don't know, a weird ass bounce that flipped into the zone. It bounces straight right. One of the young Edmonton Oilers popped it in, and Riddick looked horrible on that one. And then just seconds later, actually, McDavid scores another one where he walked around Hanifin. Hanifin looked like both of his legs are broken, and beat Riddick on a stinker five hole. Yes, McDavid looked off the shot and everything, but overall, I was actually pretty disappointed in the Flames' effort Tuesday night in the exhibition game, and I think that held true for, I mean, all the Flames guys that I talked to, and I talked to quite a few of them, but very disappointing first period. I thought we were much, much better in the second and the third. I think we actually controlled the game for all of the second and probably the first 12 minutes of the third, and then penalties kind of got in the way and problems and just everything. But overall, I thought Calgary controlled over half of the game on the Oilers, and Edmonton maybe let off the gas a little bit. How do you know? But anyways, a good exhibition game. Then we started for real Saturday night, and I'm not going to lie. When I woke up yesterday, I was more than nervous, I guess. I did not have good gut feelings. And I think a lot of that was based off what we saw earlier in the season. Heading into break, I felt a little better. But then when we got the time off, I'm like, well, how are we going to come back from this? And it just seems like every time this year that Calgary looks like they're turning a corner, like something disastrous happens for this team. This has been kind of an awful year. So the exhibition game, I'm like, poof, I wasn't so happy with that. So all day Saturday, I'm not going to lie, my nerves were a little bit on, I don't know. I was very cautious. I was very nervous. I was also very excited, though. I thought the start was going to be ultra critical, and the Flames started with a huge start in my mind. Not on the scoreboard, but just they did their job. Calgary, we'll just roll through the scoring real quick, and then in the next topic, I'm going to talk to you why I feel like this is a picture-perfect start if you're a Flames fan. Calgary did outshoot Winnipeg in the game 33-18. Winnipeg scored first. Andrew Kopp scores. It's 1-0. Johnny Gaudreau scores on the power play in the second. 1-1. Tobias Reeder scores a shorthanded goal. 2-1 Flames. Both goals either power play or shorthanded. Then Backlund scores all three goals within an 11-minute span. His also on the power play. It's 3-1. Calgary in control. Calgary did add a marker at the end of the game, an empty net goal by Andrew Mangiapane on a great pickoff of a cross-ice pass, and Mangiapane deserved that one, and I was happy to see him get it. Talbot records 17 saves, and man, that is as good a news as you're going to get as a Flames fan. Inside Edge Hockey News is your source for top-notch NHL podcasts, news, and rankings. Check out InsideEdgeHockeyNews.com.
InsideEdgeHockeyNews.com.
All right, Flames fans. This was a picture-perfect playoff game if you're a Flames fan. It was. I mean, it is amazing how this game started. It was a physical start. Kachuk was out there making his presence known right away. And you know what? It wasn't just Kachuk. And we're going to talk a lot on this show about him, but this was a complete effort. I sat down after the game After the post game was over, and boy, I didn't get to bed till like 2:30 last night. It was interesting because there was, just when I looked at the roster, not a lot of negatives from anybody on the roster. I saw so many positives when I looked at performances of each player individually. And you know what? That's what you need in the playoffs. You need everybody on board, everybody moving in the same direction. But that physical start, not by Jessica Chuck, but as a group, got the Flames off on the right track. And then it happened. The collision into the boards between Tkachuk and Scheifele, which my opinion is there is no way in hell that's on purpose. Both guys going to the board. Actually, Scheifele angled off to avoid a check from Tkachuk, and both guys went to the boards ankles first. It could have been disaster for Tkachuk as much as it was Scheifele. And Scheifele gets injured, and it looked very, very serious. To me, it looked like a broken ankle. Some people last night were talking cuts. Some people were talking knee. We're never going to know. We're not going to know till after the series is over. I thought it was, honestly, it looked like a broken ankle to me, is what it looked like. Which sucks because, yeah, okay, the Flames fan in me says, yes, this will make the series much easier. Doesn't make the series a lock, though. It makes the series much easier if Scheifele is unable to return. But as a hockey fan, I have to admit something. Mark Scheifele is probably in my top three players in the league, non-Flames players, that are my favorite. I love this guy. I would love to have him on Calgary. He is a gamer. He drives the bus, and this guy gets the job done. So I don't really want to see him hurt, and it didn't look good. But for Paul Maurice and everybody to blame this on Tkachuk just blows my mind. Tkachuk then fights Wheeler and wins the fight. He answers the bell right away, which I think was a good idea just to get that out of the way so we didn't have that hanging over our head and dragging this series down. Big keys. Flames hold the Jets to under 20 shots, 18 shots to be exact. That is enormous. The Flames get over 30 shots. I always kind of put that as a benchmark that you're not going to win many games if you don't get 30 shots. They get 33. And boy, they were struggling for shots in the first period. And I thought, holy cow, how's this team going to score? We can't even get shots on net. And we just kept eating away and grinding away. And got a couple decent power plays. And special teams really helped out. Then another thing I thought was what makes this a picture-perfect game. And the Flames didn't get down when the Jets scored. Andrew Kopp scores a really nice goal. And Johnny Gaudreau bounces right back in the second period and starts the scoring. And I'm probably the most critical guy in the world of Johnny Gaudreau. So for me to see him score made me feel really good. And it's funny because if you have free time, go back and watch this game and watch Gaudreau's play before he scores and then watch the goal, or watch Gaudreau's play in the minutes after the goal and even, you know, actually for most of the game, I would say. His intensity level amped up so much after that goal. His will to want to win the puck, which I criticize him for all the time. I feel like his will to want to win the puck sucks. And I thought it sucked early in the game. I was actually not pissed at him, but I was kind of on edge about it. But after he scores this goal, it's almost like my little kid when he played hockey. If my son scored early, he was good the rest of the game. And that's kind of what we saw in Johnny Gaudreau last night. He gets this goal in the second period and the shifts that followed. He was a little water bug out there just making stuff happen. And that's the Johnny Gaudreau we need. And that made me feel really good to see that last night. Sam Bennett, yep, he was playoff Sam Bennett. That's the Sam Bennett we need. That's the Sam Bennett we like. And then Reeder gets a shorty and he was a key player last night. Tobias Reeder gets his first playoff goal and really had a good hockey game, I thought. Wasn't ultra flashy, but on the penalty kill, how many times did you see him working the puck down in the jet zone on the penalty kill or stopping that entry? Calgary was amazing last night on the penalty kill, stopping that entry. That penalty kill, 7 for 7. Now you can't go to bat 7 times every night and the Flames need to stay out of the penalty box. That's probably one negative. But they did the job, killed 7 for 7. Backlund was on the score sheet, and you know what? When Backlund gets on the score sheet, Flames win. It just happens. It means a W if Backlund gets on the score sheet. He had a really, really good night last night, and I pick him as one of the top three key players for this Flames team. The power play, 2 for 4. Boy, is that clicking. That was good. Key goals. And one thing that didn't get talked about a lot last night after the game was over, but everybody was kind of like, well, wishy-washy on how they thought Sean Monahan played. I thought Sean Monahan played kind of a Sean Monahan game. You know, he's not that flashy guy that you notice a ton of. But he did one thing last night very, very good. He won 12 of 16 faceoffs. That's amazing. And I've noticed as this year has progressed, Monahan's been better defensively and has won the majority of his faceoffs. He's been really good in the circles. And Cam Talbot, what do you say? Lets in a goal early, not his fault, settles in really nice and quietly does his job. And that's exactly what we need from Cam Talbot. So Flames fans, can game one have been any better? I don't think so. But there is a ton of work ahead in this Jets team. They're not going anywhere.
Hockey fights, lifestyle, and tales from a first-round draft bust? We have it all and more on the Hockey Podcast Network. Your home for boutique hockey content and podcasts covering every team in the NHL.
Joining Flames Unfiltered now is my buddies from Grit 60, Connor and Brendan Farrell. And guys, one game in the books. Flames win 4-1. I'm sure that is disappointing for you guys. But all in all, let's discuss, I don't know, all craziness involved in this whole crazy game. But start of the game, how did you like your Jets in the first to start the game off?
When Scheifele goes down hurt in that first period, right out the gate, it did not look good. And immediately I'm thinking, he's not coming back this season. I'm not a doctor, but that does not look like an injury that he's going to be returning. Even if the Jets somehow make it through the next four games, I don't see him returning, at least not through the series. Having a loss like that is.
The second I saw the injury, I guess we'll get right to the heart of this game, but, I thought the game started off in a physical way for both teams, and then Scheifele goes down. My initial response when I saw it was, he's done. Broken ankle, because just the way his reaction was to me.
Sure if it was ankle. I thought he might be holding his knee, and it was awkward enough that it could be either one of those things. Mm-hmm. But
the sad thing is we're not going to know with the way the NHL is in this playoff. We're not going to know anything.
Even without COVID, it would just be a lower body injury.
But if he was gone for the season, they would tell us that.
Yeah.
But they're not going to tell us that now.
And I think, you know, when I look at how, so I guess to answer your initial question, when I look at how the Jets played in that first period, I have to put it in context of that injury.
Sure.
And I think overall, over that, you know, even without Scheifele, I thought they played relatively well in that first 20 minutes. You know, Andrew Kopp gets a goal. It was a beautiful, you know, all three players had some part in, or all three forwards had some part in that goal. Lowry with a fantastic pass below the red line. Kopp had a fantastic shot, and I think it was Mason Appleton was providing a pretty good screen. And I think all of those three, you know, all of those elements, boom, Jets are on the board. And I think overall, when the Jets were playing the Flames 5-on-5, they looked okay, even without Mark Scheifele.
So let's talk about this. And there's stuff flying all over the internet and the hockey world right now, but, dirty or not dirty?
I personally, from what I've seen, I can't see anything that would say that it was intentionally dirty. I could see, you know, you can kind of see Kachuk's skate move up a little bit. And I know there are players that have ways of getting away with things that you wouldn't be able to tell or wouldn't be able to detect at high speeds or on TV necessarily. And I know Paul Maurice thinks it was a dirty hit. I think probably at worst, Scheifele turns that quickly. I think Kachuk's thinking, well, I gotta, you know, it's very instantaneous. So it's almost instinctive. I gotta get something on him. So he's kind of leaning that way. But I think maybe that's a little bit reckless, I think at worst. But I don't think it was intentionally dirty.
I'm sorry to butt in.
No, go ahead. Yep.
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement with Connor here, and I'm probably sure that you feel the same way. Like, I saw some people comparing it to when Matt Cook sliced Eric Carlson's Achilles a few years ago. And I believe it's kind of the same deal where – I don't know if it was a slice or not, like, but –
It didn't look like a slice. It definitely, he might have pinned it a little bit.
Didn't even
– It was definitely an accident to, you know, with a player that doesn't really get the benefit of the doubt in Matthew Tkachuk in a lot of people's minds. So I get why people want to instantly, like, react to it, being like, oh, that's a dirty hit or whatever. But, like, if that's a hit by anybody else, I don't have a problem with it. It's just an unfortunate accident, I really feel. Like, he's not even looking at, like, Shifley's legs or whatever.
Not even close. Here's a critical question. During the game at all, did you feel like this was going to be controversial? Because I didn't. And I don't think of the hockey world did. I don't think until Paul Maurice said that in the post game that besides the fact that it was Matthew Tkachuk that hit the boards next to him, that I didn't think this was even going to be a topic. Because the way I looked at it was that Shifley turned off to avoid a check.
Yes.
And both of them, seriously, if you look at both of their ankles, all four legs, both players put themselves at risk, and it could have happened to any of their four legs. Yeah. And for them to say, for Maurice to say that he tried to cut him, to my knowledge, I don't even think his skate hit the back of his leg.
I don't even think it hit
his leg. And I haven't seen the angle that Maurice said he saw, and nobody has. But you know what? Isn't it funny that nobody's seen that angle?
That is a little weird. I don't know if that's like teams, like specific. Or like, not team specific, I don't know how to, but like, teams have their own footage that the public isn't, privileged to. But it was kind of, I thought there was maybe a little bit of contact that might at least pin his skate against the boards or stop it momentarily long enough for something to.
And this blew my mind because, honestly, I think Paul Maurice, and I've said this on other podcasts, I think he's my favorite coach. I think he's my favorite coach in the league, and I love his opinions. I think he's a hockey genius, but this is one where I think he had to, fuel a fire for his team to be intense for the next game is I think his game plan. I think he's playing mind games here. I think he thought, holy crap, we're probably going to have our best player gone for the rest of the series. And if I don't throw a fit and create a spark for my team for game two, what are we going to bring to the ice? I think that's what he's doing.
I think that's absolutely part of it. You know, if you're thinking, all right, we're behind the eight ball now. We have to really dig ourselves out of this one. You got to create a spark, and you can do that very easily by creating an enemy.
So what did you think? What did you guys think about Tkachuk having to answer the bell, and how that went?
And I think to me that was when you asked earlier if we thought this was going to be a thing to talk about whether or not it was a dirty hit. I think the fact that there was already some. Already from the face-off, there was some mouthing off back and forth between Tkachuk and Blake Wheeler. And the fact that that hit happens, well, I guess I call it a hit, but the incident happens with Tkachuk, right, at the center of it. And then the aftermath is they go and fight and he has to answer the bell for it. I think that already there's something there that maybe not necessarily that, well, maybe a little bit dirty, or there's something in mind of the players that say, hey, he's got to answer for this to some regard, right? And so I think that to me says this has to be something that it is at least somewhat, I don't even know if dirty is the right word for it, but I can't think
of it. Controversial.
Controversial. That's, thank you. So I think that's part of it, but you could tell in that scrap that Blake Wheeler was not a fighter.
He got popped, didn't he? And Tkachuk's not really a fighter either, because I thought Wheeler was going to kick the shit out of Tkachuk. I did. I thought, oh, my God.
I mean, so did
I. He's going to eat him alive. And actually, I didn't see it till later last night. I was watching Sportsnet, and I saw an angle where Tkachuk landed one right in the mouth on Wheeler, and that's why he went backwards. And I'm like, wow, that surprised me, because I thought Wheeler would just eat up Tkachuk.
I honestly, Wheeler doesn't fight enough for me to know what his fighting capabilities are, although now I know he's not a fighter. And I just, you know, with Kachuk's reputation, I'm like, he's got to have some sort of experience dropping the gloves every now and then, you know. So I wasn't really sure. But, Brendan, I've been doing a lot of the talking. Did you have anything?
I was just saying that from a from just like a morale standpoint, like I'm sure, you know, that fight on the bench at least helped get, you know, get the boys going.
Absolutely.
But here's a fun fact for you. Before this, Blake Wheeler's last fight was February 8th against the other Kachuk.
Wow. So here's my question. Why are the Winnipeg Jets sending out Blake Wheeler to settle a score? Why is Blake Wheeler the guy on the Jets? Well, you guys don't have anybody else to settle the score besides your second best player.
I think his part is that he's the captain.
Yeah, no, I get you. I agree with you, Brendan. I think that played a large role. And it's like, all right, I got to be the leader now. I got to step up to the bat right now and take him on. But
I guess you could send like Kulikov if you wanted to.
God, anybody, man, anybody.
Yeah, I think part of it is you could already tell that Wheeler and Kachuk were already going back.
Yeah, they were already talking, and I think Kachuk was just like, I have no idea what you're saying to me, but I'm not gonna drag this shit out like I did the Cassian thing. So let's just go, and that's why he threw the gloves like he did, because he's like, all right, I guess I gotta whatever, play the game that the Jets want me to play here. So.
Well, did the Jets also really have the opportunity to send out whatever line they wanted to against Kachuk next time he was on the ice?
You're right, Brendan. You're right. And I, you know what? Your comment about the captain makes all the sense in the world. It makes all the sense in the world. And I totally agree with that.
So, I still don't like seeing Blake Wheeler fight. But,
no. You know. No, I don't either. You know, that's same as me. Like, I don't like watching Mark Giordano fight, but he's had to do it. So. I thought this whole game was physical. There was some big hits. I mean, Laine laid an elbow into Giordano's head. I don't even think he meant to. I think they just ran into each other, yeah, into Giordano's head. I thought your boy Eakins took a solid clip run at Kachuk, which was dirty as hell. But okay, that's fine. But there was some big hits. I mean, Sam Bennett unloaded one on Morrissey behind the net, and
there was one hit, I forget who made it, but there was one hit where he pinned two Jets.
Oh yeah, that was
the boards.
That was Lindholm. Like, that was right away to start the game.
What is going on with our two defensemen behind the net there? Get it together, guys.
That was right away to start the game, and I thought, wow. But you know, for playing in the bubble now and for playing with in front of no fans, I mean, a lot of the hockey world is worried about where the intensity level was going to be. And boy, these players didn't have any problem ratcheting that up right away to Stanley Cup. I mean, it was crazy how many hits there were and how physical this game was. But I think the biggest thing that stymied the Jets, and what really surprised me as a Flames fan, is that we really contained you and we held you to, you know, an extremely low shot count and minimize those chances. And we gave you seven power plays and still Winnipeg recorded only 18 shots. And that really surprises me from a team that I would consider a top-notch offensive a power.
Yeah. And I mean, just watching you mentioned the power plays, and Paul Maurice mentioned the power plays quite a few times. I mean, the Jets got outscored while they were on the power play in that game. Zero power play goals, one shorthanded goal against. Like,
yeah.
Could not generate anything on their power play.
I don't think it'll go like that in game two.
I mean, I don't expect it to either, but when, you know, as Paul Maurice mentioned, when Scheifele is out, that's one of your big drivers on the power play, you know, in your center. It kind of showed Flames were able to get the puck out of the zone. The Jets couldn't create entries back in. They couldn't get set up. They couldn't create anything on the power play, really. And so when that happens, you know, getting seven power plays in a game isn't an advantage.
How did you feel about the play of Connor Hellebuyck?
It was actually kind of on brand for Connor Hellebuyck, kind of, because he's not really a great goaltender on the penalty kill. Part of that is just that the Jets' penalty kill is just terrible. So there's that, but he's also just not that great on the penalty kill. But I mean, it was all right. He also just had zero help last night.
I didn't pin any of this on Hellebuyck. I thought Hellebuyck played.
I can't look at the chances that they gave up and say this is on Hellebuyck.
Not at all.
But I also can't look at this game and say Hellebuyck played extraordinarily well.
No, he didn't. Well, he did. Obviously, they didn't win, so he didn't steal anything for them. But I feel like you put him in a position to win. But the fact is, you're not going to win with only 18 shots.
No.
And it surprised me that a team that I feel so strongly that they're good offensively, that I'm losing one guy like Scheifele. I know Scheifele drives the bus there in Winnipeg, but it surprised me that the pushback wasn't stronger from Ehlers and a couple of the other guys. I thought Andrew Kopp was really good.
That Kopp was Kopp and Lowry. They really
Lowry's always good though, man. He's a gamer. That guy is a good player. Ross Levick was a guy coming into this series that scared the hell out of me for some reason, and I still think he's going to be a thorn in the Flames side because this series is far from over, and lots can happen. What do you guys think the Jets have to do to regroup and come out with a better effort in game two?
Well, I was going to say, I'm not really sure there's a whole lot they can do right now. I mean, we've talked about their center depth a lot. You know, I mean, when it was already bad, you take Scheifele out of the equation. I mean, Scheifele is like by far and away their best offensive driver of play. And so when you take that out, and you're already talking about a team that regularly gets outshot by a lot night in, night out. They spend a lot of time in their own zone. So when you take out like one of the few guys with, you know, an offensive pulse, it gets ugly real fast. You know, I saw a tweet last night that was like the Jets had like 7 of the first 9 shots on goal of the game. Mm-hmm. After that, like the Flames outshot them like 25-4 or whatever.
Yeah.
Or 25-6. Like it was bad. I mean, but it was also just like that's kind of what the Jets have been like all season, except not maybe to not like that degree, but it was not a significant departure from where they've been.
There was a look, and you know, to make things worse for the Winnipeg Jets, Patrick Laine in the third period went down with looked to be a wrist injury, and I thought it came on that altercation with Giordano, but it was the opposite wrist of what I thought Giordano slashed, and Paul Maurice in his post-game press conference also said that it had nothing to do with that play at all.
I found Paul Maurice's response when somebody asked him about the slash. I found his response and the way he delivered it I found it humorous just because it was so deadpan, it wasn't the slash. And I was just like, oh, okay, he just.
Do you think
ended that now?
Maybe I'm thinking weird into this. I heard that too, and I thought, that's an interesting way to respond. But I also thought, maybe I'm the one playing mind games, but I also thought, so he's not going to make a big deal out of that one to make the Tkachuk one even a stronger appeal from him. That's what I thought. I'm not going to bat on both of them. I'm going to bat hard on this one. That's the way I felt. And I also felt that in this post-game, by him being as fired up as he was about the Scheifele thing, means that Scheifele's done.
I think Scheifele. And if you listen to they had a little bit of media availability today, too, and it sounds like the players that spoke, that's just from their demeanor, it sounds like Scheifele's probably done.
Yeah. And you know,
Lowry said that. Lowry said that, or he referenced a cut about Scheifele, and then Paul Maurice was asking about it, and he declined saying anything about it. So,
oh really?
Too. Yeah.
I haven't heard this.
Well, if it's a cut, that might be a good thing. I mean, that would be better than a broken ankle.
Well, if it's a cut to his Achilles, though, it's kind of game over at that
point. Yeah, I guess we depend on the severity of it. You know, here's another thing, and this is slightly off topic, but if it is an Achilles cut, why do these guys they're playing the National Hockey League. Why are these guys not wearing these? There's equipment that can reduce and there's cut-proof socks. I mean, there's cut-resistant socks. Well, why are these guys not wearing those? I don't understand that. But
I think you're asking like the last people to possibly answer that question.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I don't understand that. But the hole looks deep for the Jets. It's probably, if you're a Jets fan, it's not as deep as it probably appears to be the morning after.
It feels really deep right now, and I don't know how to get out.
I don't think it's as deep as you think it is. I think game two is going to be a good hockey game. I think it's going to be a battle. And I saw so many good things with the Flames last night that it's crazy. And I'm not trying to be Debbie Downer on the Flames and the fact that, I mean, if they can replicate that performance on Monday, they will win again. I just don't know how you could replicate that deep of a performance from this team again. Maybe they will be able to, but I don't think this series is over by any means. What do you guys think that the Jets have to do better to be effective in game two?
Well, first they got to figure out who their centers are. That's first and foremost. Figure out who your centers are. Figure out who is stepping into what roles now. You know, dress Jansen Harkin, see what he's going to do. Figure out, okay, where does Jack Roslovic, do we move Blake Wheeler over to center and Jack Roslovic slots up somewhere up higher? Figure out chemistry with your new line mates. Figure out, you know, run the power play, figure out who is going to be the driver on the power play now. And that seems to be at the top of Pomerantz's list of importance.
I think special teams will play a big role in game two as it did in game one. I mean, you take the special teams out and, the Flames, well, besides a shorthanded and an empty netter, the other two goals came on the power play for the Flames. So 5-on-5, the Flames weren't lighting any fires either. So, game two will be interesting. I don't think this series is over. I also don't think Scheifele is going to be back, which is not good news for the Jets, but,
I don't even know if Laine is going to be back. Maybe, cause I thought they said he was going to see a specialist today as well.
That would be a real kicker if Laine wasn't on.
I mean, but they do have at least they have some depth on the wings, and they're not going to be able to necessarily replace Laine, but they have a much better chance of sort of filling that gap with other players than they do with Scheifele because they have no center depth.
Yeah, no, it's with Scheifele going out, it really, and we talked about it when we talked last week on your guys' podcast. It's funny how a roster can look so solid and with an injury or two, it gets depleted and Jets really, look weak up the middle right now. And,
I want to see, Kampf and Lowry get more ice time. Just use them as the first line. Just throw them up there as that first line. See how that works.
They both look good last night. I know that.
Why not?
Yeah. Lowry's is definitely a bright spot for this Jets team. And, you know, honestly, did you guys think your defense was that bad last night? Because I didn't.
I didn't think it was that bad last night. It's just kind of, I mean, just eyeballing it, it just kind of seemed like a little, pretty lifeless effort on all fronts last night. It was just kind of a weird game where, I mean, basically all the, you said it, but all the Flames' damage basically came from special teams. So, and honestly, like, I was looking at the numbers, like, the Jets weren't bad at 5-on-5 last night. They were just kind of okay. And just things just kind of spiraled out of control.
It did. It did kind of get out of control. But I thought, I mean, like you said earlier in the interview, the Jets were controlling the shot count early. And I was worried that the Flames were even going to score for a while because it's like, well, we can't even get shots in the first period, much less score a goal. So 5-on-5, I thought the Jets were fine. But I think when you go 0-for-7 on the power play, that's a real kicker. And they really didn't get a lot of looks. Their entry on the power play was atrocious last night. And I think that's one of the keys they're going to have to get things shored up for game two, which, boy, we're not getting any break. Game two goes Monday afternoon, game three Tuesday, late afternoon. And this series is going to be decided in short fashion. Hopefully, hopefully the injuries, I mean, I don't think Scheifele will be back, but hopefully Laine will be back for you guys and things will get rolling. But, by next Saturday, we'll know a winner in this one.
Yeah. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. Certainly. I mean, I like, you know, some hockey early in the afternoon, get it out of the way. You know, it's a lot better than staying up till 1 in the morning here on the East Coast. But
I love late night games. But, hey, we don't – I mean, there's a lot of teams playing in this bubble, and we got to get a lot of hockey games done in today. And I think the league did a really good job shuffling it around. And, yeah, we'll get some afternoon hockey on a Monday afternoon, Flames-Jets. It should be interesting, hopefully not as controversial as this first one. Thanks for joining me, guys. It's always fun visiting with you guys and getting your perspective on what Flames fans feel is a wonderful way to start the series and what Jets fans feel is a hole that is very, very deep. But, yeah, I'm thinking realistic, though. This series is far from over. But thanks for joining me, guys, and I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you.
I'm Corey Crenshaw.
I'm Richie Suave Flores.
And this is Sporty with Corey and Richie Suave.
On the Hockey Podcast Network.
What did I just listen to?
Oh, this game is just bullshit now.
Oh my gosh. They actually make me feel uncomfortable. What was it? Panty what?
The game has gone to bullshit.
Panty melted?
Why do we record these during the middle of games? Oh, God.
Be sure to listen to Corey and I every Monday. We are your go-to source for the Arizona Coyotes on the Hockey Podcast Network.
Matthew Tkachuk stirring the pot again. And, man, does controversy just follow this guy? And I'm surprised, but in the first shift last night, he got right to it, playoff hockey. He said in quotes leading up to the playoffs that he was pissed off. He's tired of losing. He wants to win. And, yeah, it was good to see him with that intensity level. And like the first shift, he went out and hit like three or four Jets players. He drilled Shifley kind of on a cross check from behind up during the line change in front of the bench. And that really set the tone. And then there was the hit on Shifley. And like I mentioned earlier on in the podcast, talking to the guys from Grit 60, I in no way think this is dirty. I cannot even fathom that, Maurice would call this dirty. I thought the Shifley hit, really wasn't even a hit. Both guys went to the boards. Shifley angled away to avoid a check from Tkachuk. Both guys' legs went in, and yeah, it could have been disaster for either guy. Very interesting to hear what Tkachuk had to say. In no way did he think that this was a dirty play at all or anything that he would ever would try to injure.
Matthew, can you just take us through the collision with Mark Shifley? Do you feel you had any role in his injury?
No, like absolutely not. Like, and you know what? I'm back checking on him, and it's such an accident. I felt terrible. From the result of it, I remember he was turning away and I just went in and, my left skate had a little bit of like the speed wobbles and I was kind of moving probably too fast for myself and was going down and, my leg just collided with, it looked like it jammed him up. His body was going one way, but the way I hit him is his leg stayed that one way and, feel terrible. He's a top player in the NHL and somebody I've come to know, the past few summers, the last couple summers ago, training at Gary Roberts and such a great guy and, just a top player in the league. And, you know, it's not good for the game when somebody like that, you know, isn't in the game. So, it was very unfortunate and unlucky and just such an accident and I feel terrible about it. But there's really nothing that could have happened. I mean, he dumped it in and was going the other way. And I just was committed to my check. And like I said, was kind of going down a little bit and had a little bit of the speed wobbles with the skates, but, I heard something and, you know, looked back and, you know, felt terrible for him. But, you know, when you think about playoff hockey, it's everybody's finishing their checks and I started from the first shift. And, you know, because of something like that, you know, everyone's still going to finish their checks. It's just such an unfortunate play and such an accident. You know, I just don't feel good about it, but, you know, I hope that he's okay. And, cause he's a top player in this league, and he's great for the game.
So the question was asked to me last night. Did you think at the point of the hit that it was going to be considered controversial? And I didn't at all. And actually when Tkachuk answered the bell against Wheeler, minutes later, I was like, what, why are we, what, wait a minute, what's going on? Where, why do the Jets think this is a controversial play? Do they think this is a dirty play? And, yeah, and then the fight happens and Wheeler calls out Tkachuk and they drop the glove and, a good fight ensues. And I thought honestly that Tkachuk was going to get fed, by Wheeler. Wheeler's a big boy and Tkachuk actually lands one and, right in the face and pops, Wheeler to his back. And, to my surprise, Tkachuk wins the fight and he even amps up the intensity level even more. But when the game ended, I'm going through the post game stuff and I'm watching Paul Maurice and he calls this despicable, dirty and everything. I was just at odds. I couldn't believe what Maurice was saying.
Paul, what was your impression of the play involving Scheifele when he was injured?
Oh, it was intentional. Ken, it was a filthy, dirty kick to the back of the leg. You can't see it on the program feed, but you take the blue line feed and you zoom in. He went after the back of his leg. Could have cut his Achilles. It could have ended the man's career. It's an absolutely filthy, disgusting hit.
You know, and then later on in the game, Eakins tries to settle the score with Tkachuk. On what was really kind of a dirty clip that really didn't get a lot of talk. And I thought that play was more dirty than the Tkachuk play, but one that happens, it seems like, all the time also, especially to Tkachuk. And I'm not trying to be a homer here, but this guy's getting has a bad rap for something that I don't think is warranted. He's not a dirty, dirty player. He's had his moments, the Doughty thing, everything like that, but he's not, you know, a Brad Marchand or a Cook or anybody but like that. But what was cool is that the Eakins play resulted in a penalty. Backlund scores a beauty shot on the power play, and that's the dagger into the Jets. That sealed the deal in this game. And the motion of Tkachuk on the bench just made me ecstatic. I was so happy to see him have that emotion. Let's face it, hockey fans, Matthew Tkachuk was not on the score sheet last night, but he set the tone. He set the tone for the Flames, and that's what Matthew Tkachuk brings to the table. He is in the heads of the Jets, and obviously he's in the heads of their coach too. I'm going to jump ahead in the show a little bit, and let's talk about this Facebook poll. I do a Facebook poll or a listener question every episode. Well, last night, I did things differently. I thought, you know, most of my Facebook polls are to Flames Facebook groups, which I love every one of them, all five of them that I'm part of. I thought I got to go onto my NHL-based one. And so I went on to NHL Trash Talk, which is a huge, huge group on Facebook that has some really interesting stuff on a nightly basis. And I did a poll, and my question was simple. Matthew Tkachuk hit on Mark Scheifele. Dirty or not dirty? Or clean or dirty? Well, 200 plus responses. Yep, 200 plus responses in 8-10 hours. And a lot of comments to go with it. Some crazy comments and some very, very good. But 80% of the polled people who are not Flames fans could care less, and they're not Jets people either. Some of them are Flames, some are Jets. Yeah, they're NHL fans. 80% said this was a clean hit. They don't even know what Maurice is talking about. I don't have to tell you that that's what I'm in agreement with. And 20% of the polled people said that this was dirty. So are they saying this was dirty because it's Matthew Tkachuk? If Tobias Reeder goes in and this play happens, are we even talking about it today? I don't think so. I don't think we're talking about it at all.
InsideEdgeHockeyNews.com.
All right, Flames fans. Time for a little bit of Flames news. The King Clancy Memorial Trophy, Travis Hamonic awarded for the Flames. This goes to a player that exemplifies leadership qualities on and off the ice. On some weird news, I got this one from our good buddy Adi James, who joins the show frequently. Hopefully we'll have him on next week's show. We were talking about the retro home and away jerseys and why we're not seeing those in the playoffs. And evidently the NHL turned down the Flames due to logistical reasons to be able to wear those jerseys, which kind of surprised me because we saw Carolina yesterday in their black ones. And in the preseason game, we saw Arizona in their retro jerseys. So I don't know why the Flames were denied of this. Bad news in the bubble. The hotel that the Flames were staying in earlier in this week was having air conditioning problems. And yeah, that's not good when we're having record heat in Edmonton. Is this the Oilers doing this to them? I don't know. I doubt it, but God, makes you wonder, doesn't it? Speaking of those Oilers, some good news for Flames fans. The Flames will get Edmonton's third pick in either the 2020, 2021, or the 2021 draft due to last summer's Neil Lucic trade. Now the Oilers get to select the season, and they'll get to select which season at the start of this year's third round. They're either going to say the Flames can have the third round pick this time, or we'll wait 1 year. The conditions needed to be that Neil had to score 21 or 10 more than Lucic. And according to John Shannon, neither the Flames nor the Oilers would move on their demands for recompensation in the Lucic deal. Hence, it went to arbitration. And the bottom line is the league supported the prorated stats for a full 82-game season. Thus, yes, the Flames will get the pick, and many, many of us thought that was a dead deal. So that's another bit of good news we got from the Flames.
Get all your Flames Unfiltered podcasts, team news, team updates, and highlights at flamesunfiltered.com.
All right, Flames fans, game previews. We're not going to preview a bunch, but I've got to roll through the schedule and let you know what we have that lies ahead this week. And this podcast drops Monday morning on the Hockey Podcast Network, and hours later at 12:30 Mountain, it's game two versus the Winnipeg Jets. A good way to spend your holiday Monday here in Canada. August 3rd, Monday, 12:30 Mountain, game two, Winnipeg, Calgary. Back-to-back Tuesday, August 4th, Game 3 versus Winnipeg at 4:45 Mountain Time. That one, the Flames will be the visiting team. Game 4, slated for August 6th, Thursday. And that one, time is to be determined. And then, if necessary, which Game 4 would be if necessary, also is set for August 8th, Saturday, Winnipeg, Calgary, game 5, if necessary. I would guess the time now is slated to be determined. I would guess that would be the late hockey night in Canada. That would be my guess. So, it's a busy week of Flames playoffs. Next week, yes, next week, we are back on the Hockey Podcast Network and flamesunfiltered.com for another great episode of the podcast. August 10th, we will have a new episode. And on that episode, we will do a complete review of the qualifying round. Hopefully, we are previewing round one of the Stanley Cup best of seven. And we will be wrapping the season, and pray we are not wrapping up the season. Boy, I hope not. A great game one. Let's carry it on to game two. We hope that we have some great guests next week. There's a lot to be determined between now and then. And needless to say, there will be a lot up in the air. We have some great guests lined up next week. It should be a great show. We'll see you next week. Go Flames. Let's win this series.
Get connected. Flames Unfiltered can be found on Twitter at Flame Unfiltered. And also make sure you check out our Facebook page at Flames Unfiltered. Check out host Brad Brood on Twitter at Brad Brood. And if you like what you hear, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. You can find Flames Unfiltered on all the major podcast players. Consider subscribing to Inside Edge Hockey News on Patreon. That'll get you exclusive content and much more. Thanks again and enjoy the hockey.
Thanks for tuning in to Flames Unfiltered. Check back for more action-packed Calgary Flames talk.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk covering every team in the NHL. New episodes every Monday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.
This has been a production of Inside Edge Hockey News Radio, brought to you by the Hockey Podcast Network. This production is copyrighted and distributed by the Inside Edge Hockey Media Group. Yeah!